more of Lake Effect now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers. Milwaukee has a rich musical history, and a new anthology is taking a personal approach to chronicling generations of music here in Milwaukee from 1950 through 2000. Milwaukee Rock and Roll is co-edited by Dave Lurson, Philip Naylor, and Bruce Cole. Lurson is the managing editor of the Shepherd Express, and he's a regular contributor here on Lake Effect. Naylor is a history professor at Marquette University, and Cole is a working musician and the curator of the Jean Cuget Milwaukee Music Collection at Marquette. They joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio before social distancing and the stay-at-home order to talk about the book. Lurson starts by explaining how they came together to write this anthology.
About 15 years ago, Bruce and I were having lunch, and Bruce proposed this, I think. You were talking about a book out of Austin, Texas, about the music scene down there. And the conversation went, well, why isn't there something like this in Milwaukee, covering the diversity of Milwaukee's rock scene and related forms of music? And so it just got rolling from that point.
I got involved with it in part because the Rock and Roll Hall of Rock and Roll Museum in Cleveland. As you enter the museum, there was an exhibit of rock and roll in Ohio and Cleveland. And I thought, boy, you know, we could certainly do that in Milwaukee. Plus, we had a particular advantage, and that is having Bruce Cole involved with it. Bruce being a curator of the Jean Cuget Milwaukee Music Collection at Marquette University, and not only that, having an elephantine memory concerning different rock groups. So we basically had a walking archive with us, and Dave and I had known each other, and soon so we all kind of got together and planned it, and in part at Miss Katie's Diner.
And Bruce, I imagine curating the Milwaukee Music Collection was a great help, as well as your experience just playing throughout the music scenes throughout the years here that you kind of dive into a little bit in this book.
Yes, the collection, we have several thousand recordings going back to the turns of the previous century, all related Milwaukee entertainers, bands, people like that in all formats and genres. And we had a lot of memorabilia, a lot of pictures, a lot of articles, this and that. And so there was plenty to show off in the book, so to speak. And I think the good idea about it, too, was the idea that it's a reflective history.
More of a reflective study than an encyclopedia, which
right,
many
exactly.
people might assume when hearing such a
yeah,
title.
Yeah, I think the history of any town, you know, many cities, rock and roll or any, would be like 192,000 pages, you know, something like that. But these are people that know what they're talking about in different, you know, areas of the music, you know, contributing. And that's nice.
Now, let's take a look at Milwaukee overall. Did the city have an atmosphere that you feel encouraged these music scenes and benefited musicians over the years? And you cover a wide range of genres here. But does Milwaukee have any certain characteristic or more accessibility to music compared to other metropolitan cities?
Well, this is the accessibility aspect, I think, is in Milwaukee. And I mean, one could go up and talk to musicians. There was a lot of give and take, and it was really really wonderful, particularly during these years, and which kind of reflects our age group here. But what interested me in particular were the Chicago blues guys who had come up and played the Milwaukee scene, and in between their, you know, their sets, you can, you know, talk to Muddy Waters, and or after a set, talk with Willie Dixon. And to me, that was a real thrill.
I think that Milwaukee always had a great deal of talent here. Lots of kids with some basic music lessons, going back to the days of the accordion, where everybody played accordion in Milwaukee, apparently. And there were accordions in some of the early rock and roll bands, too. There was a kind of a crossover period, apparently. But one of the things about Milwaukee in more recent decades was the ability of musicians, songwriters, artists here to kind of develop themselves in a way that was different than being in New York or Los Angeles. The glare of the media spotlight wasn't as withering, and yet at the same time, there was media attention locally here for what you were doing. It was a nice kind of balance. It was a city that was just the right size. It was small enough that different music scenes could actually feel like genuine communities, and big enough to afford at least reasonable opportunities to perform and to develop in the area.
I started playing in the 60s, early 60s, and there was, like Dave said, there were opportunities to make a living as a musician. You know, there were nightclubs downtown where you could work four nights a week. In northern Wisconsin, there were all these roadhouses, and then in the late 60s, you had the teen bars, so to speak, because you could drink beer at 18 outside of Milwaukee. And then there was just Chicago down the road where you would go. And the early guys in the 60s, the first rock and rollers here, to venture down there without knowing what was going on and discovered things that would later, you know, develop into vinyl records.
I feel we should also address Milwaukee's physical makeup. It's heavily segregated. How did this influence the music scenes here?
Well, there was segregation and there was a crossover. Sometimes the crossover had to happen intentionally. Phil and I were present in 1979 at a memorable event at Zach's North Avenue, where the punk rock band, the Haskells, leading band of its kind in Milwaukee, invited a local R&B or soul group to share the stage with them that night.
That's right.
Yeah, and the name of that group, the soul group, was
The Essentials.
Yes. Beautiful performances by both groups. And this was considered to be really kind of groundbreaking. It was a happy occasion. Everybody, you know, shared the music and the fandom and got along well. But the fact that this was such a unique occasion testifies that this kind of thing didn't happen on anything resembling a regular basis. Bruce can probably talk a little bit about the early 1960s, where there were some integrated bands, like Junior Brantley. Wasn't he performing with white musicians in some of the bands that he was in at that time?
Yeah, one of his band, Junior and the Classics, was you know, him, and he was African-American. And they were very popular around town. And there was Little Artie and the Pharaohs, and he was a Latino, and he was in a band with some white guys and a Greek guy in that band and some other. And with musicians, there was diversity within that world. And that, you know, when I was 15, I went down to Chicago to play with bands, and I hadn't seen or met a black person in my life up until that time. I grew up in West Dallas Central. We had one Hawaiian girl, and that everybody thought that maybe she was a black person, you know. But then driving down to the south side of Chicago and playing these old theaters, it was wonderful because I met all these rhythm and blues guys and soul guys, and it was just exciting and wonderful.
Well, plus the community was just so productive. Harvey Scales, people like that.
And, exactly.
You know, I mean, so there was a lot of really good music. I think that's the common denominator here, which made Milwaukee kind of an interesting place, is that you really had very good musicians.
Now, with Bronzeville's decline, there was the rise of R&B in Milwaukee, and then the blues in Milwaukee, the avant-garde coffee house also fostered an interest. So with Milwaukee's unique venue culture and bar culture, you know, does this also play a role in no matter what's happening socially in the city? As you mentioned, music was a common denominator.
Well, lots and lots of bars to play in, and maybe more so than in some other cities in the heartland of America. Where in Milwaukee in the old days, every corner had, intersection had four bars, one in each corner, and many of them had back rooms where bands could play. And as Bruce said, it was possible, and in fact even likely, that a person could make pretty good money playing music for the longest time in Milwaukee. So the avant-garde coffee house is an interesting phenomenon because many of the old-time African-American blues musicians who were so-called rediscovered during the 1960s came to Milwaukee, played there. And what they did was they didn't so much inspire young African-Americans, but they inspired young white musicians to adapt the blues and to find their own way into that kind of music.
Now, and of course, we would be remiss if we are here at WUWM and we don't talk about Bob Reitman.
Absolutely, you know, an essential figure in many people's lives. I mean, his musical tastes as a DJ in 70s rock radio stations in Milwaukee was very pivotal for me. But Phil, I'll turn this one over to you.
Well, he was an educator and is still an educator. And I appreciated that concerning Bob. And it was through him where we had the, of course, the great presence of Bob Dylan. You had the, he was interested in Dylan, interested in Lou Reed, Patti Smith, Bruce Springsteen. I mean, all that kind of filtered through Reitman. And I mean, he did a great service and still does a great service to the community.
Right. He continues it with his son, Bobby. It's All Right, Ma, It's Only Music, in the studio right next door to us. Now, with the note of venues in Milwaukee, of course, there's a lot of bars, things like Shank Hall is one of the places that has stood the test of time for a little bit. But what kind of roles did State Fair and Summerfest have in influencing the local music scene? Today, we think about what are all the big national bands and names coming to Summerfest. But in its early days, was it more an attraction for local bands to have an even bigger platform outside of their typical bar music scenes?
Well, people really wanted to play Summerfest in the early days, and you had to be a member of the Musicians Union to play Summerfest up until a certain point. Bruce, you probably remember that. Sadly, I think the Musicians Union is not powerful as it once was. But so, yes, that was a great feather in one's cap to be at Summerfest on a bigger stage, playing to kind of a random audience of people in a way. I mean, it was a testing ground, I think, for your mettle as a musician and entertainer.
I think by the third or fourth year, because the first couple of years, it was actually located in different spots around town. It wasn't just down there where it is. And I think it was the first couple of years, too. It was always muddy down there, and it wasn't—
Horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible. It wasn't all that popular.
Yeah. And,
but it certainly became quickly popular, and then within 5 or 6 years, it was sort of the ideal dream of every local band to play Summerfest, because you'd have this fan base, and, you know, that would be great.
Now, Bruce, you mentioned that Milwaukee's rock and roll story is before the Beatles, and then after the Beatles. So do you say— Would you say this is both in sound and in people's attitudes towards music?
Yeah, I'd say in every respect that's what it is, because before the Beatles, it was a whole different kind of world of music. When the Beatles came along, they with probably the biggest door they opened is they said, hey, you guys, you know, all you kids, 15, 16, you can become a star overnight within a, you know, within a little bit of time. All of a sudden, one day in 1964, I was in a band and I had my hair all ratted up and sprayed with hairspray. And no less than 2 weeks later, I was growing long hair. You know, my dad was getting really mad. And, you know. But then everybody, like all of a sudden, there were about 150 bands. Whereas before that, the bands were more interested in playing the local nightclubs and making a 45 to give away at their gigs. Whereas all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, you can make a record, you can become famous, you can be like this, and you can smile. A lot of bands just sneered all the time before that. So there were a lot of things going on.
Well, Bruce, you've said that the period before the Beatles was also one that was particularly creative and even possibly more creative than the period afterwards.
Well, I would say, you know, these early pioneers in rock and roll, 1957, 58, the first rock song by came out in 57, a record where Roland Stone, a local West Dallas guy, blue-collar kind of kid, goes down to Chicago. He plays all the parts himself, makes the first vinyl record that a Milwaukee band would make. And then some of these guys were, you know, they were into it to make money, and they were really professional, hardworking guys. And women. There were some women, too. Not many, but... So I'd say they just, you know, opened the door for what was going to come.
Now, this book covers a lot of individual artists, Milwaukee groups, but for all three of you, what's a Milwaukee song or a song that had an influence here that you would recommend to our listeners that stands out to you, whether it's because of musical style or if it has, you know, a personal significance to you?
Well, it would be really hard to pick out a song, but...
perhaps a group.
Well, I think that Sigmund Snopek, you can kind of cover everything with him. And, you know, prog rock, for one thing, but he can do so much more. And, of course, he was also involved with the Violent Femmes. So I would say that he offers a lot of genres for people to listen to, and he's been very productive and still is, even doing classical work.
I would go with the Haskells because they identified very strongly with being from Milwaukee. Many of their songs touched on recognizable Milwaukee landmarks, Milwaukee personalities. They covered songs by earlier Milwaukee bands such as the Legends. So they were a little bit of a history lesson of Milwaukee rock and roll back in the late 1970s, early 80s.
I would say that the Legends were very important because they were the biggest band in the early 60s. They were it. That was it. And they were the first. They signed about 3 weeks with Capitol Records before the Beatles did. Unfortunately, they were so tremendously good, it didn't show in the recordings. You know, they didn't have, and that happens often. You'll see a band that's really, really good, and then they go in the studio and it doesn't come out the way it does live. But I would say the Legends, their early album is something to listen to for, you know, historical purposes.
All right. Well, Bruce Cole, Dave Lurson, and Philip Naylor, thank you all for coming and sharing your work with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Lurson, Philip Naylor, and Bruce Cole are the co-editors of Milwaukee Rock and Roll, 1950 to 2000, a reflective history. They joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio before the governor's social distancing order.